Continuing Birds of Prey by Wilbur Smith.
Hal flinched in the turmoil of disrupted air, his eardrums singing from the cannonade. Whole trees crashed down, and branches and leaves rained down upon them. Directly in front of him, he saw one of the culverins hit squarely and hurled off its train. The bodies of two of the Resolution sailors were sent spinning high into the air. "Father, where are you?" Hal tried to make himself heard in the pandemonium. But then, through it all, he heard Sir Francis' voice. "Stand to your guns, lads. Aim at the Dutchman's ports. Give those cheeseheads out there some of our good English cheer." Hal leapt down into the gun pit beside his father, seized his arm and shook it urgently. "Where have you been, boy?" Sir Francis glanced at him, but when he saw the blood on his clothing, he did not wait for an answer. Instead, he grunted, "Take command of the guns on the left flank. Direct your fire." Hal interrupted in a breathless rush. "The enemy ships are only creating a diversion, father. The real danger is in our rear. The forest is full of Dutch soldiers, hundreds of them." He pointed back with his blood-stained blade. "They'll be on us in a minute." Sir Francis did not hesitate. "Go down the line of guns. Order every second culverin to be swung round and loaded with grape. The front guns continue to engage the ships, but hold your fire with the back guns until the attack in our rear is point blank. I will give the order to fire. Now go." As Hal scrambled out of the pit, Sir Francis turned to Big Daniel. "Take these men of yours and any other loafers you can find and go back and slow the enemy advance in our rear." Hal raced down the line, pausing beside each gun pit to shout his orders and then running on. The sound of the barrage and the answering fire from the beach was deafening and confusing. He reeled and almost went sprawling to the ground as another broadside from the black frigate swept over him like the devil winds of a typhoon, smashing through the forest and ploughing the earth around him. He shook his head to clear it and ran on, hurdling a fallen tree trunk. As he passed each emplacement and alerted the gunners, they began to train the culverins around, aiming them back into the forest. Back there they could already hear musket fire and angry shouts as Big Daniel and his small band of seamen charged into the advancing hordes that poured from the forest. Hal reached the gun pit at the end of the line and jumped down beside Abberley, who was captaining the team of gunners there. Abberley thrust his burning match into the touch hole. The culverin leapt and thundered. As the stinking smoke swirled back over them, Abberley grinned at Hal, his dark face stained even darker with soot, and his eyes bloodshot with smoke. "Ah! I thought you might never pull your root out of the sugar field in time to join the fight. I feared I might have to come up to the cave and prise you loose with an iron bar." "You'll grin less happily with a musket ball in your tail feathers," Hal told him grimly. "We're surrounded. The woods behind us are full of Dutchmen. Daniel's holding them, but not for much longer. There are hundreds of them. Train this piece around and load it with grape." While they reloaded, Hal went on giving his orders. "We'll have time for only one shot, and then we'll charge them in the smoke," he said as he tamped down the charge with the long ramrod. As he pulled it out, a sailor lifted the heavy canvas bag filled with lead shot and forced it down the muzzle. Hal drove it down to sit upon the powder charge. Then they ducked behind the parapet on both sides of the gun, keeping clear of the area where the train would recoil, and stared past the stockade into the forest beyond. They could hear the ring of steel on steel and the wild shouts as Daniel's men charged, then fell back before the counter-charge of the Green Jackets. Musket fire hammered steadily as Schroeder's men reloaded and ran forward to fire again. Now they caught glimpses through the trees of their own seamen coming back. Daniel towered above the others. He was carrying a wounded man over one shoulder and swinging a cutlass in his other hand. The Green Jackets were pressing him and his party hard. "Ready now!" Hal grated at the seamen around him, and they crouched below the parapet and fingered their pikes and cutlasses. "Abberley, don't fire until Daniel is out of the line." Suddenly, Daniel threw down his burden and turned back. He raced into the thick of the enemy and scattered them with a great swipe of his cutlass. Then he ran to the wounded seaman, slung him over his shoulder, and came on again towards where Hal crouched. Hal glanced down the line of gun pits. Although the forward-pointing cannon was still banging away at the ships in the lagoon, every second culverin was directed into the forest, waiting for the moment to loose a storm of shot into the lines of attacking infantry.
At such short range, the shot will not spread, and they are keeping their spaces, Abelie muttered.
Schroeder has them well under control, Hal agreed grimly. We can't hope to bring too many down with a single volley.
Schroeder? Abelie's eyes narrowed. You did not tell me it was him. There he is,
Hal pointed at the tall, wigless figure striding towards them through the trees. His sash glittered and his moustache bristled as he urged his musketeers forward.
Abelie grunted. That one is the devil. We will have trouble from him.
He thrust an iron bar under the culverin and turned it round a few degrees, trying to bring the sights to bear on the colonel.
Stand still, he urged, for just long enough to give me a shot.
But Schroeder was moving up and down the ranks of his men, waving them on. He was so close now that his voice carried to Hal as he snapped at his men,
Keep your line! Keep the advance going! Steady now! Hold your fire!
His control over them was apparent in the determined but measured advance. They must have been aware of the line of waiting guns, but they came forward without wavering, holding their fire, not wasting the one fair shot they carried in their muskets. They were close enough for Hal to make out their individual features. He knew that the company recruited most of its troops in its eastern colonies, and this was apparent in the Asiatic faces of many of the advancing soldiers. Their eyes were dark and almond-shaped, and their skins a deep amber. Suddenly, Hal realized that the broadsides from the two warships had ceased, and snatched a glance over his shoulder. He saw that both the Black Frigate and the Gull had anchored a cable's length or so off the beach. Their guns were silent, and Hal realized that Cumbrae and the frigate captain must have arranged with Schroeder a code of signals. They had ceased firing for fear of hitting their own men.
That gives us a breathing space, he thought, and looked ahead again.
He saw that Daniel's band was much depleted. They had lost half their number, and the survivors were clearly exhausted by their foray and the fierce skirmishing. Their gait was erratic. Many would barely drag themselves along. Their shirts were sodden with sweat and the blood from their wounds. One at a time, they stumbled up and flopped over the parapet to lie panting in the bottom of the pit. Daniel alone was indefatigable. He passed the wounded man over the parapet to the gunners, and, so murderous was his mood, would have turned back and rushed at the enemy once more had not Hal stopped him.
Get back here, you great ox! Let us soften them up with a little grape shot, then you can have at them again.
Abelie was still trying to line up the barrel on Schroeder's elusive shape.
Hey, he is worth 50 of the others, he muttered to himself in his own language.
Hal, though, was no longer paying him any heed, but trying anxiously to catch a glimpse of his father in the furthest emplacement and take a lead from him.
By God, he's letting them get too close, he fretted. A longer shot would give the grape a chance to spread. But I'll not open fire before he gives the order.
Then he heard Schroeder's voice again.
Front rank! Prepare to fire!
50 men dropped obediently to their knees, right in front of the parapet, and grounded the butts of their muskets.
Ready now, men!
Hal called softly to the sailors, crowded around him. He had realized why his father had delayed the salvo of culverin until this moment. He had been waiting for the attackers to discharge their muskets, and then he would have them at a fleeting disadvantage as they tried to reload.
Steady now, Hal repeated. Wait for their volley. Present your arms,
Schroeder's command rang out in the sudden silence.
Take your aim.
The file of kneeling men lifted their muskets and aimed at the parapet. The blue smoke from the slow match in the locks swirled about their heads, and they slitted their eyes to aim through it.
Heads down,
Hal yelled. The seamen in the gun pits ducked below the parapet, just as Schroeder roared,
Fire!
The long, ragged volley of musketry rattled down the file of kneeling men, and lead balls hissed over the heads of the gunners and thumped into the earth ramp. Hal leapt to his feet and looked down to the far end of the line of gun pits. He saw his father jump onto the parapet brandishing his sword, and although it was too far for his order to carry clearly, his gestures were unmistakable.
Fire!
Yelled Hal at the top of his lungs. and the line of guns erupted in a solid blast of smoke, flame, and buzzing grapeshot. It swept through the thin green line of Dutch infantry at point-blank range. Directly in front of him, Hal saw one of them hit by the full fury of the volley. He disintegrated in a burst of torn green serge and pink shredded flesh. His head spun high in the air, then fell back to earth and rolled like a child's ball. After that, all was obscured by the dense cloud of smoke. But though his ears still sang from the thunderous discharge, Hal could hear the screams and moans of the wounded resounding in the reeking blue fog. "All together!" Hal shouted as the smoke began to clear. "Take the steel to them now, lads!" After the mind-stopping blast of the guns, their voices were thin and puny as they rose together from the gun pits. "For Frankie and King Charlie!" they shouted. And the steel of cutlass and pike winked and twinkled as they jumped from the parapet and charged at the shattered rank of green uniforms. Abberley was at Hal's left side and Daniel at his right as he led them into the melee. By unspoken agreement, the two big men, one white, the other black, placed protective wings over Hal, but they had to run at their best speed to keep up with him. Hal saw that his misgivings had been fully borne out. The volley of grape had not wrought the devastation among the Dutch infantry that they might have hoped for. The range had been too short. 500 lead balls from each culverin had cut through them like a single charge of roundshot. Men caught by the discharge had been obliterated, but for every one blown to nothingness, 5 others were unscathed. These survivors were stunned and bewildered, their eyes dazed and their expressions blank. Most knelt blinking and shaking their heads, making no attempt to reload their empty muskets. "Have at them, before they pull themselves together!" Hal screamed, and the seamen following him cheered again more lustily. In the face of the charge, the musketeers started to recover. Some leapt to their feet, flung down their empty guns, and drew their swords. One or two petty officers had pistols tucked to their belts, which they drew and fired wildly at the seamen, who rushed down on them. A few turned their backs and tried to flee back among the trees, but Schroeder was there to head them off.
"Back, you dogs, and sons of dogs! Stand your ground like men!"
They turned again and formed up around him. Every man of the Resolution's crew who could still stand on his feet was in that charge. Even the wounded hobbled along behind the rest, cheering as loudly as their comrades. The two lines came together and immediately all was confusion. The solid rank of attackers split up into little groups of struggling men, mingled with the green serge coats of the Dutch. All around Hal, fighting men were cursing, shouting, and hacking at each other. His existence closed in, became a circle of angry, terrified faces, and the clatter of steel weapons, most already dulled with new gore. A green jacket stabbed a long pike at Hal's face. He ducked under it, and with his left hand seized the shaft just behind the spearhead. When the musketeer heaved back, Hal did not resist, but used the impetus to launch his counterattack, leading with the Neptune sword in his right hand. He aimed at the straining yellow throat above the high green collar, and his point slid in cleanly. As the man dropped the pike and fell back, Hal allowed the weight of his dropping body to pull him free of the blade. Hal went smoothly back on guard and glanced quickly around for his next opponent, but the charge of seamen had almost wiped out the file of musketeers. Few were left standing, and they were surrounded by clusters of attackers. He felt his spirits soar. For the first time since he had seen those two ships sail into the lagoon, he felt that there was a chance, that they might win this fight. In these last few minutes they had broken up the main attack. Now they had only to deal with the sailors from the Dutch frigate and the Gull as they tried to come ashore.
"Well done, lads! We can do it! We can thrash them!" he shouted.
And the seamen who heard him cheered again. Looking about him, he could see triumph on the face of every one of his men as they cut down the last of the green jackets. Abberley was laughing and singing one of his pagan war chants in a voice that carried over the din of battle and inspired every man who heard it. They cheered him and themselves, rejoicing deliriously in the ease of their victory. Daniel's tall figure loomed at Hal's right side. His face and thick muscular arms were speckled with blood thrown from the wounds he had inflicted on his victims, and his mouth was wide open as he laughed ferociously, showing his carious teeth.
Where is Schroeder? Hal yelled, and Daniel sobered instantly. The laughter died as his mouth snapped shut and he glared around the quietening battlefield. Then Hal's question was answered unequivocally by Schroeder himself. Second wave! Forward! He bellowed lustily. He was standing on the edge of the forest, only 100 paces from them. Hal, Abberley and Daniel started towards him, then came up short, as another massed column of green jackets poured out of the forest from behind where Schroeder stood. By God! Hal breathed in despair. We haven't seen the half of them yet. The bastards kept his main force in reserve. Well, there must be 200 of the swine. Daniel shook his head in disbelief. Quarter columns! Schroeder shouted, and the advancing infantry changed their formation. They spread out behind him, 3 deep, in precisely spaced ranks. Schroeder led them forward at a trot, their ranks neatly dressed and their weapons advanced. Suddenly he held his sword high to halt them. First rank, prepare to fire! His men sank to their knees, while behind them the other 2 ranks stood steady. Present your arms! A line of muskets was raised and levelled at the knots of dumbstruck seamen. Fire! Roared Schroeder. The volley crashed out. From a distance of only 50 paces, it swept through Hal's men, and almost every shot told. Men dropped and staggered as the heavy lead pellets struck. The line of Englishmen reeled and wavered. There was a chorus of yells, of pain and anger and fear. Charge! Hal cried. Don't stand and let them shoot you down! He lifted the Neptune sword high. Come on, lads! Have at them! On each side of him, Abberley and Daniel started forward, but most of the others hung back. It was dawning on them that the fight was lost, and many looked back towards the safety of the gun emplacements. That was a dangerous signal. Once they glanced over their shoulders, it was all up. Second rank! Shouted Schroeder. Prepare to fire! 50 more musketeers stepped forward, their weapons loaded and the matches burning. They walked through the gaps in the kneeling rank that had just fired, advanced another 2 paces in a brisk, businesslike manner, then knelt. Present your arms! Even Howell and the dauntless pair flanking him wavered as they gazed into the muzzles of 50 levelled muskets, while a moan of fear and horror went up from their men. They had never before faced such disciplined troops. Fire! Schroeder dropped his sword, and the next volley slashed into the wavering seamen. Hal flinched as a ball passed his ear so closely that the wind of it flipped a curl of his hair into his eyes. At his side, Daniel gasped. Oh, I'm struck! Jerked around like a marionette and sat down heavily. The volley had knocked over another 12 of the Resolution's men and wounded as many more. Hal stooped to aid Daniel, but the big bosun growled, Don't dither about here, you fool. Run! We're beaten, and there's another volley coming. As if to prove his words, Schroeder's next orders rang out close at hand. Third rank, present your arms! All around them, the Resolution's men, who were still on their feet, broke and scattered in the face of the levelled muskets, running and staggering towards the gun pits. Help me, Abberley! Hal shouted, and Abberley grabbed Daniel's other arm. Between them, they hauled him to his feet and started back towards the beach. Fire! Schroeder shouted. And at that instant, not waiting for a word from each other, Hal and Abberley flung themselves flat to earth, pulling Daniel down with them. The gun smoke and the shot of the third volley crashed over their heads. Immediately they sprang up again, and dragging Daniel ran for the shelter of the pits. Are you hit? Abberley grunted at Hal, who shook his head, saving his breath. Few of his seamen were still on their feet. Only a handful had reached the line of gun pits and jumped into their shelter. Half carrying Daniel, they staggered on, while behind them there were jubilant cheers and the green-clad musketeers surged forward, brandishing their weapons. The 3 reached the gun pit and pulled Daniel down into it. There was no need to ask of his wound, for the whole of his left side ran red with blood. Abberley jerked the cloth from around his head, wadded it into a ball, and stuffed it hurriedly into the front of Daniel's shirt. Hold that on the wound, he told Daniel. Press it as hard as you can.
He left him lying on the floor of the pit and stood up beside Hal.
"Oh, sweet Mary," Hal whispered. His sweat-streaked face was pale with horror and fury at what he beheld over the parapet. "Look at those bloody butchers."
As the green jackets came clamouring forward, they paused only to stab the wounded seamen who lay in their path. Some of their victims rolled on their backs and lifted their bare hands to try to ward off the thrust. Others screamed for mercy and tried to crawl away, but laughing and hooting, the musketeers ran after them, thrusting and hacking. This bloody work was quickly done, with Schroeder bellowing at them to close up and keep advancing. In this moment of respite, Sir Francis came dodging down the line and jumped into the pit beside his son.
"We are beaten, father,"
Hal said dispiritedly, and they looked around at their dead and wounded.
"We have lost over half our men already."
"Hal is right,"
Abberley agreed.
"It is over. We must try to get away."
"Where to?" Sir Francis asked with a grim smile.
"That way?"
He pointed through the trees towards the lagoon, where they saw boats speeding in towards the beach, driven by the oars of enemy sailors, eager to join the fight. Both the frigate and the Gull had lowered their boats, which were crowded with men. Their cutlasses were drawn, and the smoke of their matchlocks blued the air, trailing out across the surface of the water. They were shouting and cheering as wildly as the green jackets in front. As the first boats touched the beach, the armed men spilled out of them and raced across the narrow strip of white sand. Howling with savage zeal, they stormed at the line of gun pits in which the empty culverins gaped silently, and the Resolution's remaining crew cowered bewildered.
"We cannot hope for quarter, lads," Sir Francis shouted. "Look at what those bloodthirsty heathen do to those who try to yield to them."
With his sword, he indicated the corpses of the murdered men that littered the ground in front of the guns.
"One more cheer for King Charlie, and we'll go down fighting."
The voices of his tiny band were small and hoarse with exhaustion as they dragged themselves over the parapet once more and sallied out to meet the charge of 200 fresh and eager musketeers. Abberley was a dozen paces ahead and hacked at the first green jacket in his path. His victim went down under the blow, but Abberley's blade snapped off at the hilt. He tossed it aside, stooped and picked up a pike from the dead hands of one of the fallen English seamen. As Hal and Sir Francis ran up beside him, he hefted the long oak shaft and thrust at the belly of another musketeer who rushed at him with his sword held high. The pike head caught him just under the ribs and transfixed him, standing out half an arm's length between his shoulder blades. The man struggled like a fish on a gaff, and the heavy shaft snapped off in Abberley's hands. He used the stub like a cudgel to strike down the third musketeer who rushed at him. Abberley looked around, grinning like a crazed gargoyle, his great eyes rolling in their sockets. Sir Francis was engaged with a white Dutch sergeant, trading cut for thrust, their blades clanking and rasping against each other. Hal killed a corporal with a single neat thrust into his throat, then glanced at Abberley. "The men from the boats will be on us in an instant." They could hear the wild cries in their rear as the enemy seamen swept over the gun pits, dealing out short shrift to the few men hiding there. Hal and Abberley did not need to look back. They both knew it was over.
"Farewell, old friend," Abberley panted. "They were good times. Would that they had lasted longer."
Hal had no chance to reply, for at that moment a hoarse voice said in English, "Hal Courtney, you bold puppy, your luck has just this moment ended." Cornelius Schroeder pushed aside two of his own men and strode forward to face Hal.
"You and me," he shouted, and came in fast, leading with his right foot,
taking the quick double paces of the master swordsman, recovering instantly from each of the swift series of thrusts with which he drove Hal backwards. Hal was shocked anew at the power in those thrusts, and it taxed all his skill and strength to meet and parry them. The Toledo steel of his blade rang shrilly under the mighty blows, and he felt despair as he realized that he could not hope to hold out against such magisterial force. Schroeder's eyes were blue, cold and merciless. He anticipated each of Hal's moves, offering him a wall of glittering steel when once he attempted the riposte, beating his blade aside, then coming on again remorselessly. Close by, Sir Francis was absorbed in his own duel and had not seen Hal's deadly predicament. Abberley had only the stump of the pike shaft in his hand. No weapon with which to take on a man like Cornelius Schroeder. He saw Hal, his immature strength already spent by his earlier exertions, wilting visibly before the overwhelming force of these attacks. Abberley knew by Schroeder's expression when he judged his moment, and gathered himself to make the kill. It was certain, inevitable, for Hal could never withstand the thunderbolt which was ready to loose itself upon him. Abberley moved with the speed of a striking black cobra, faster even than Schroeder could send home his final thrust. He darted up behind Hal and lifted the oak club. He struck Hal down with a crack over his ear, rapping him sharply across the temple. Schroeder was amazed to have his victim drop to the ground senseless, just as he was about to launch the death thrust. While he hesitated, Abberley dropped the shattered pike shaft and stood protectively over Hal's inert body. "You cannot kill a fallen man, Colonel. Not on the honour of a Dutch officer." "You black Satan!" Schroeder roared with frustration. "If I can't kill the puppy, at least I can kill you." Abberley showed him his empty hands, holding up his pale palms before Schroeder's eyes. "I am unarmed," he said softly. "I would spare an unarmed Christian," Schroeder glared, "but you are a godless animal." He drew back his blade and aimed the point at the centre of Abberley's chest, where the muscles glistened with sweat in the sunlight. Sir Francis Courtney stepped lightly in front of him, ignoring the colonel's blade. "On the other hand, Colonel Schroeder, I am a Christian gentleman," he said smoothly, "and I yield myself and my men to your grace." He reversed his own sword and proffered the hilt to Schroeder. Schroeder glared at him, speechless with fury and frustration. He made no move to accept Sir Francis's sword, but placed the point of his weapon on the other man's throat and pricked him lightly. "Stand aside, or by God I'll cut you down, Christian or heathen." The knuckles of his right hand turned white on the hilt of his weapon as he prepared himself to make good the threat. Another hail made him hesitate. "Come now, Colonel. I am loath to interfere in a matter of honour. If you murder the brother of my bosom, Frank Courtney, then who will lead us to the treasure from your fine galley of the Standvastigate?" Schroeder's gaze flicked to the face of Cumbrie as he came striding up to them, the great blood-streaked claymore in his hand. "The cargo," Schroeder demanded. "We have captured this pirate's nest. We will find the treasure is here." "Now, don't you be so certain of that," the buzzard waggled his bushy red beard sadly. "If I know my dear brother in Christ, Frankie, he'll have squirreled the best part of it away somewhere." His eye glinted greedily from under his bonnet. "Oh, no, Colonel. You're going to have to keep him alive, at least until we've been able to recompense ourselves with a handful of silver X dollars for doing God's work this day."